You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Rod Guignard, if you're listening, what am I playing right now? And Jerome from Philly, he's my other jazz aficionado. I had to send Rod Guignard a free book. Oh, speaking of which, have you all seen my new commercial? Have you seen the new commercial for The Entrepreneurial Secret? Have you seen my long-form video bio? Yes, you can comment. Some of you have jokes. I love them. Awe from Ghana by way of New York, he questions whether I really got a haircut at the barbershop in Queens on Jamaica Ave. Brother Charles, can you imagine that? There is supporting evidence for his claim. Anyway, go over to theesecret.com. That's the new official book site for the Entrepreneurial Secret book series. That's theesecret.com. Theesecret.com. Jokes are feedback, which I appreciate. Glenda Holder gave me some good advice. She watched the long form video, me talking about my parents. She Facebooked me with feedback. I want to thank all of you all who have given feedback. Stacy Muhammad, thank you. I'll read that off of my Facebook page. In any event, we were in Russia now. Let's go to France. Let's see how the French are talking about this climate change conference.
It's day three of the climate summit in Copenhagen, where representatives of over 190 nations are working towards what they hope will become a new global protocol to address global warming. A draft text that has been leaked by the host country, Denmark, has been making waves. Developing nations say the draft agreement would disadvantage them. A bit earlier, I spoke to our correspondent, Eve Irvine. She said that the row between rich and poor nations looks to be the talk of the day once again in Copenhagen.
Here this morning, the G77 group, which is basically a grouping of over 130 developing nations, they held a meeting, and it was top of their agenda was this Danish text. Now, I was speaking to some of the delegates as they walked out of this meeting, and two from Burkina Faso told me that they were pretty certain that there's two texts being prepared behind closed doors, and they said that the very big problem here is that none of the delegates have seen these texts. So they're very clear that they don't accept anything that's going to be imposed on them, and they're very upset at the idea that rich nations are grouping together and preparing stuff without even asking their opinion. That was some personal anger perhaps coming from them. I was also speaking to a delegate from Gambia, and he said that at the inside of the meetings, people were staying a lot more calm. They were keeping a level head. He said, you have to expect that these things are going to happen, and at moments like this, not everybody's going to be a gentleman all the time. But he did point out that this situation does need to be cleared up quick, and he said that the G77 has asked that their chairman have a meeting with the president of this summit.
Eve Irvine there in Copenhagen.
Now let's go to Russia. Pardon me. Let's go to Al Jazeera. We've done Russia. We've done the French. Let's see what the Middle East, quote unquote Middle East, is talking about.
Delegates at the UN climate conference in Denmark are seeking calm. It follows a controversial leak of this document that's caused divisions among rich and poor nations. Developing countries say the draft leaked to the British media sets unequal limits on per capita emissions for the developed and developing countries, and it's threatened to split negotiations, which are vital to a global plan to tackle climate change. Alan Fisher is our correspondent in Copenhagen.
Leaks are made because people want to make positions public. You don't just stumble across these documents. There's always a reason behind it. Now, there's two possible reasons for this. First of all, the Western nations could have been saying, this is our absolute bottom line. This is the draconian measures we are prepared to take to safeguard our interests. So we want you to get real round the table. Or it could have been the developing nations saying, look, if you're even considering anything like this, there is going to be a revolt that you have never seen the like of before. So I think now everyone has had the chance to air their views on that and just get into the process now of trying to get a deal in place before leaders arrive next week. But what is absolutely clear is the anger that this document provoked.
The idea of harmony of a world moving to agreement in Copenhagen has been seriously challenged by the leaked document. It's called Dish Text, give to the rich and takes from the poor. Among the proposals, the UN sidelined in future climate change negotiations. The Kyoto Protocols, the world's only legally binding deal on cutting emissions, essentially abandoned. Control of climate change finance handed to the World Bank, with any money to poorer countries tied into specific climate action, and allowing poor countries to emit just under 1.5 tonnes of carbon per person by 2050, while allowing rich countries to emit almost twice as much. The world's poorest countries say if this what's really on offer, it's a no.
We will not sign an inequitable deal. We will not accept a deal that condemns 80% of the world population to further suffering and injustice.
The controversial document was passed to a British newspaper.
This is a leaked document which comes from Denmark as the president of this meeting, with the help, we understand, of the UK, of the US and other rich countries, and it's a draft text which they intend to put in front of world leaders when they arrive next week. It does not include many figures for reductions and things. On every level it seems to be unsatisfactory.
This document may be a strategic leak to influence discussions. What is clear, if the final proposals are anything like this, there's virtually no chance of an agreement.
Reminders of this climate change summit are all over Copenhagen. It's winter here, but milder than normal, and weather forecasters say that'll become more common. The research indicates a rise in global temperatures which shows no sign of ending, and the decade since the turn of the century is shaping up to be the warmest in recorded history.
Behind this message, we also wanted to give indication on the highlights of what happened last year. Extreme events, many parts of the world were hit by droughts or heat wave or floods. So unfortunately, extreme events are likely to get more frequent and for some of them more intense with the global warming.
If the world's richest countries believed the Danish text would become the basis for an agreement, they perhaps misjudged what others were willing to accept. It's a serious threat to international cooperation and united action. Copenhagen may still be historic, but maybe not for the reasons everyone hoped. Alan Fisher, Al Jazeera, at the Climate Summit in Copenhagen.
My colleague Veronica Pedroza had a chance to talk in some more detail to Lumumba Diaping, the chairman of the G77 and China bloc, and asked him why he finds it all such a terrible development.
We are deeply concerned that the views and the architecture of the deal that the Danish Prime Minister is put forward is not only unfair, but condemns the citizens of Africa, many islands and developing countries, to a certain devastation to their lives and livelihood. That's one. The second element, which is equally disturbing, as you have said rightly, it changes the balance of obligations between developing and developed countries. So South African poor, who have, after 500 years of apartheid and colonialism, will be treated as equivalent of obligations as the Danish citizens or the UK citizens or the US citizen or the Japanese citizen. And that will apply to all the rest of us. Further, it goes to establish what they define as fast-track money, the equivalent of $10 billion, okay, as a financial package, which is literally a bribe. There's nothing to describe it, because when you compare the $10 billion with the risk that we are facing and the $1.1 trillion that United States and developed countries put forward in 2 weeks to address the financial crisis, you'll see that the developed countries are certainly not interested in addressing this grave risk that humanity faces. They seem to define the interests of humanity as an advancement of their economic national interest.
To be cynical, there's not really anything new in that. That kind of national self-interest going first has been unfortunately a trademark of many international negotiations. So realistically, why are you still there, Ambassador Diaping?
That's gangster. She just called his bluff. She's saying you all been having these complaints for years. Why are you even there?
We are there because we cannot afford a failure of Copenhagen. We are there to say, let wisdom, let common sense prevail. We call upon all the presidents of the world, starting from President Obama to the Australian Prime Minister, to rethink their thinking about how to approach the climate change. I would ask of Obama, would he tell his daughters that sacrificing their cousins, aunts and nieces and extended family in Africa is the price that we have to pay?
Damn. He's asking President Obama to ask Sasha and Malia, is sacrificing their cousins in Kenya worth it? Whew. I might nominate him as Gangster of the Week.
In order to achieve narrow national interests of few countries, I don't believe that's common sense. We are here to ask them to do the right thing, and that opportunity is still exists.
Iraq's Prime Minister.
Okay, you have just received a mental massage on the climate change summit in Copenhagen. We gave you the perspective of what Russian news, French news, and Al Jazeera. Now, I have already a nominee for Gangster of the Week. I'm going to put the company or the corporate brand that he represents. Well, let me read the story. I'll keep you in suspense for about 10 seconds. Let me hit you with this article. If you have a nominee for the Gangster of the Week, let me know. You know how it goes. Don't listen. I nominated myself last week. And from Austin, Texas, she was impressed that I had the courage to nominate myself. Well, here's my nominee for Gangster of the Week, already in hour number one. Here's the article. PIMCO hires former TARP chief Kashkari. Neil Kashkari, the first head of the government's $700 billion financial resource program, will join Pacific Investment Management Company as a managing director and head of a new investment initiatives, the company said Monday. PIMCO, who I used to spell with a P, it is not P-I-M-P-C-O, it is P-I-M-C-O. PIMCO, one of the world's largest bond managers in a unit of Germany Alliance, said Kashkari will be based in Newport Beach, California office. Kashkari, a former official at Goldman Sachs, was selected by then Treasury Secretary Henry M. Paulson, a former chairman of Goldman, to run the financial bailout effort in the fall of 2008. So yes, ladies and gentlemen, the individual who was selected to run the financial bailout effort in 2008 is now working for a company that benefited from that effort. Kashkari stayed on in the early months of the Obama administration to run the Troubled Assets Relief Program, TARP. He was replaced in the spring by Herbert M. Allison, Jr., who now serves as Assistant Treasury Secretary for Financial Stability. The hire will help cement PIMCO's status as one of the firm's closest to the Treasury Department and Secretary Timothy F. Geithner. Geithner's calendars from the early months of the Obama administration show multiple contacts with PIMCO founder and co-chief investment officer Bill Gross. I'm just connecting dots here because many of you believe that only African governments or developing countries practice crony capitalism. But what do you call a man that left Goldman Sachs to run a bank bailout, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP, and then goes and works for the largest bond owner in the world, PIMCO? What is that if not crony capitalism? Where's the rule of law in that that you advise quote-unquote third world countries on? This article from the Associated Press says while Geithner was president of Federal Reserve Bank of New York, it awarded PIMCO contracts to help manage the response to the financial crisis. PIMCO has helped oversee a program that guarantees on assets owned by Citigroup and Bank of America and helped run a Fed program to buy $1.25 trillion in mortgage bonds. This is gangster. According to the Government Accountability Office, GAO, Kashkari ran some of those programs from his Treasury post. Let's go to the Nightly Business Report. Let me loop this for you.
A new job for the man who was running and in charge of running the Treasury's bank rescue program. Neil Kashkari will join the Pacific Investment Management Company, or PIMCO, the world's largest bond fund. The 36-year-old PIMCO's new investment initiatives. PIMCO founder Bill Gross says Kashkari will be part of the firm's expansion into active equities. And Jeff, you'll recall that Kashkari helped direct the government's $700 billion bailout program, also known as TARP.
Oh, we understand Kashkari starts at PIMCO next Monday.
That's right. A new job for the man who was running and in charge of running the Treasury's bank rescue program. Neil Kashkari will join the Pacific Investment Management Company, or PIMCO, the world's largest bond fund. The 36-year-old will head up PIMCO's new investment initiatives. PIMCO founder Bill Gross says Kashkari will be part of the firm's expansion into active equities. And Jeff, you'll recall that Kashkari helped direct the government's $700 billion bailout program, also known as TARP.
Oh, we understand Kashkari starts at PIMCO next Monday.
That's right.
I mean, is it just me? I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know how to tell you to how to stop this if you, you know, have your head in the sand. Now, this is no different than what people accuse certain governments in Africa of doing. There's no checks and balances. They accuse, how they do it in Africa is they will accuse a leader who is a head of a state-owned enterprise with a joint, who has a joint venture with a private company. That person all of a sudden becomes the finance minister in Africa. So the same person who was over the banking sector, say in Africa, and was giving certain contracts or preferential treatment as related to certain business or inside information, that person is now a crony capitalist in Africa. Neil Kashkari, my nominee for Gangster of the Week. Reggie from Chicago, he's checked in. He says, peace, Cedric. The Williams and Martinez fight should have been a draw. The Williams and Martinez fight, Sergio Martinez and Paul Williams, should have been a draw. The judge who scored it 119 to 110 was definitely high. It was a good and entertaining fight, and I purchased volume one of your book, The Entrepreneurial Secret. Peace, Reggie. Peace. I owe you an email, Reggie. Thank you. For those of you that don't know, I do not have on a white t-shirt today. We're in mourning today. Here's why.
Martinez says he's fighting this fight in memory of the late Vernon Forrest. Were they friends? No. He says he never met Forrest, but when he learned about Forrest's outreach to developmentally disabled adults and impoverished children, he developed a fondness for him, and he misses him and fights in his honor tonight. Hard right hand, and Williams goes down, and Martinez has evened the round.
9-9.
Brilliant.
Combination counterpunch.
Williams landed one big shot in the round. Martinez landed two.
Hey, I wasn't alone on this. Why am I the only person? Yeah, I'm the leader. Me and Bernard, we're the co-leaders of the Paul Williams White T-Shirt Nation movement. Why am I the only person now coming clean? There were numerous viewers and listeners of this program who pledged allegiance to our leader, Paul Williams. Let me give you a look. Where are you? I'm not going to take this by myself. I am traumatized. Let me give you a picture of our leader after the fight. Paul the Punisher Williams. That's how he looked after the fight. Damn. This is how our general sounded after he won by decision, but I believe he lost the fight. Reggie from Chicago says it should have been a draw. I'm traumatized.
Congratulations, Paul, on, first of all, engaging in a classic fight. What are your thoughts right now?
You know, a good fight, man. You know, bring out the war. Like I said, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't going to try to box him. I'm going to try to make it a war and make him fight me. You know, that's what we had to do.
Early on, you scored a knockdown. By the end of the round, he scored a knockdown that seemed to really hurt you. Were you hurt?
No, you know what I'm saying? He stung me like I stung him and stuff. You know, I had to get up and show what a warrior made out of. You know what I'm saying? That's part of my business, first time ever being knocked down and stuff. But, you know, I've been knocked down before in the gym, so I had to get up and show what a true champion made out of. You know what I'm saying? I had to put it on.
No one would question your heart. Until now, certainly not after a performance like this. But in terms of the matchup itself, he was catching you time and again with big right hooks that seemed to have an effect on you, even though you kept coming. What was the effect of those hooks?
I mean, they let me know that I was in there with a true champion and stuff, but, you know, through all the training and, you know, switching up and kind of threw me off a little bit, and I started getting him a rhythm around the fourth round. But, you know, he's a warrior, man, and I liked it, that, you know what I'm saying, because I know he's going to get some big shots in, and I'm going to get some big shots in, too.
Did you think you had to pull out the late rounds to win the fight?
Oh, most definitely. My man was telling me, you know what I'm saying, you got to, hey, if you want it, you got to go get it. And so, you know what I'm saying, he's like, you got to make him fight. You got to keep throwing punches and stuff. I couldn't get the body work like I wanted to, you know what I'm saying, but I just did what I had to do, you know, to keep throwing and make him fight me.
Do you have any thoughts at the moment of wanting to do it again?
Oh, if Mr. Peterson, Al, and Dan, and HBO want to see it again, hey, I'm all in for it.
Congratulations. Amazing fight, Paul.
That's right. I'm glad y'all enjoyed it, Paul said. That's right. Had to put it on him. Hey, listen, we're not out of the woods yet. Let me give you something from Bloomberg. Credit default swaps, sovereign debt, the debt of whole nations now is in jeopardy. Is Greece about to go under? Is Spain about to grow under? Listen to what I heard on Bloomberg before we came on air today. These ratings agencies are very powerful. It's one of the reasons why I have a little bit of a concern for what Dambisa Moyo recommends for African governments. Subject for another day. But listen closely. Are Spain and Greece about to default on their debt?
Well, it did look like Wall Street would open higher and shrug off recent concerns about global debt levels. But then we saw these headlines out on Spain. Standard & Poor's Rating Services says today that it is revising Spain's outlook to negative. It had been listed as stable. S&P cited concern about Spain's public finances, and they downgraded that country from AAA to AA back in January. Said that the country will experience a, quote, more pronounced and persistent deterioration in its public finances and a more prolonged period of economic weakness versus its peers than had been originally expected back in January. So it's still in the A category, but getting a downgrade this morning. And that news compounded fears that have been dominating headlines about the dangers of investing in debt-ridden economies. Trouble is mounting for Greece and for Dubai, and we'll go live to both locations in just a moment. But first, let's check in on Greece, where stocks are falling again today. Stocks there down about 5%, extending yesterday's 6% plunge. Our economics editor, David Tweed, joins us now live from Athens with more. David, what are you hearing there on the ground?
Margaret, it's been something like a slow train wreck since the summer. You know, the cost of Greece's credit default swaps, this is the cost of insuring debt, the sovereign debt, has risen now to $209,000 to insure every $10 million worth of debt. Now, by contrast, in Germany, that cost is only $23,000. So it does give you an idea. Now, the question on people's minds is Greece in danger of defaulting on its debt? Well, we asked that question to the finance minister this morning, and this is what he had to say about it.
There is no risk, simply because what investors can expect in the next weeks and months, days even, is to continue seeing signals that the situation is coming under control. And fundamentally, this is what they're expecting.
But Margaret, the finance minister and also the prime minister also talked today about how Greece needs to regain its lost credibility. And that goes to the very heart of the Fitch downgrade of the debt here to AAAB yesterday. I'm going to quote to you from the report. They said that the Greece has a poor historical track record, and they need to see more evidence that it can actually do something to get its budget deficit into order, Margaret.
David, there are also concerns not just about Greece, but now today about Spain, raising the question of whether or not there's some sort of contagion here. To what degree is that a factor?
Margaret, the contagion will kick in when we see countries actually defaulting on debt. Then you'll see a credit market freeze, and like we saw in September last year after the collapse of Lehman Brothers. As for the fear of contagion right now, not such a fear going on. But what we are seeing is a new era coming into world economies, and that's one of fiscal austerity. Margaret, back to you.
No, back to me. Take a look at your screen. The handsome gentleman on your screen is my nominee for Gangster of the Week, PIMCO, at least, his company. If you go from managing $1.25 trillion with the Federal Reserve and $700 billion, the Department of Treasury, to a job with PIMCO after you had gotten that job from coming from Goldman Sachs. Yeah, if you go from Goldman Sachs to the Treasury and the Fed and then to PIMCO, you are my nominee for Gangster of the Week.
A new job for the man who was running and in charge of running the Treasury's bank rescue program. Neel Kashkari will join the Pacific Investment Management Company, or PIMCO, the world's largest bond fund. The 36-year-old will head up PIMCO's new investment initiatives. PIMCO founder Bill Gross says Kashkari will be part of the firm's expansion into active equities. And Jeff, you'll recall that Kashkari helped direct the government's $700 billion bailout program, also known as TARP.
Oh, we understand Kashkari starts at PIMCO next Monday.
That's right.
In addition to George Washington, more than a dozen United States presidents have also been Freemasons, including Andrew Jackson, Theodore Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, and Gerald Ford. Some have even claimed that George Washington, working with Thomas Jefferson, an alleged member of the Illuminati, planned for the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., to be constructed in a symmetrical shape resembling a great Masonic power grid.
Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program. Cedric Muhammad.
Something going on. I feel funny, can't tell me nothing different. My nose twitching. Intuition setting in like Steve Vision. I still close my eyes, I still see visions. Still hear that voice in the back of my mind. So what I do, I still take heed, I still listen. I still paint that perfect picture. I still shine bright like a prism. My words still skipping. I know you can't, don't, won't get it. You chose to ride that shit, salt with it. I'm still afloat. I ain't the captain of the yacht, but I'm on the boat. I ain't
Cedric Muhammad.
Knowing that I don't. You acting like you will, but I know you won't. You won't. I read between the lines of the eyes of your brows. Your handshaking matching your smile.
Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program. Cedric Muhammad.
Staring at hammers, ready to go bananas. Two vests on me, two extra clips on me. I know my mind ain't playing tricks on me. I ain't skits, homie. Ain't nobody drop a mic on me. It's like they try and plot and sit on me. I hear this voice in the back of my mind like Mac, tighten up your circle before they hurt you.
Cedric Muhammad.
Body language, 85% communication, nonverbal. 85% swear they know you. 10% know they swear. Man, the other 5 time I'll show you. Just know you. Can pull his strings, you the puppet master. Some other bitches. Man, watch who you puffin' after. Play your cards, go against all lies. Shoot for the moon. If you miss, still amongst those stars.
Cedric Muhammad.